Joshua Shapiro, we caught you not in Europe, but here in the U.S. in Chicago. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, Jerry.
Now, you used to live in Chicago, I think.
Yes, that's correct. I was born here in Chicago, and I grew up here. Then I moved out to California. Then I actually moved to Las Vegas for about a year.
Yeah, you and I were out in Las Vegas at the same time, full time, but I didn't run across you. I wish I had. Were you interested in crystal skulls at that time?
Oh, yes. Our first book, Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed, had just come out when I moved to Las Vegas, so I was going around the country promoting it.
Well, I want to get into a lot of things about the crystal skulls in a minute. Now, you have a book that's out of print, but you do have some copies. People could go over to your website and order that book. What is the name of that book?
Okay, the first book we did, this was a joint book with F. R. Nick Nocerino, Sandra Rowland, and myself. It's called Mystery of the Crystal Skulls Revealed. It was published in 1989, but I still have copies here in Chicago that people can get, although it's pretty difficult to find. And then, of course, we have our new book, which, if I might, I'll just say the name of that. Journeys of the Crystal Skull Explorer.
Yeah, that's an e-book, and Larry Dickin read that. I didn't get a chance to get to it. I've been on the road traveling myself. And he says it's quite a good read. Are you thinking about putting that out as a regular book, too?
Yes, we have an agreement with what's called a self-publisher.
Uh-huh.
And what's going to happen is the book should be available, I don't know, perhaps October, something like that, later in the year. And again, if people come to our website, we'll have information how they can actually order the printed version of that book.
Now, how long have you been in Europe?
I basically moved to Europe towards the end of 2001, and I went there for two reasons. Number one, my wife was Dutch, and she wanted to stay in Holland because of her children. But also, when I had traveled there in the summer, I had met a Dutch publisher, and I made an agreement, to try to come up with a book with them. And unfortunately, we still haven't agreed on how to get this book out, but hopefully next year it will also be in a printed form in Dutch. And the only printed form of our book that does exist, in case there are any of your listeners who speak this language, is Polish. In Poland, they published a version of our book.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I was just going over the stats of our marketing people last night, and about 48% of our listenership is in Europe, believe it or not.
Oh, wow, great.
So even though we're quite well received here in the States as well, naturally, we'll get into the mysteries of the crystal skulls here in a moment because it's really an intriguing subject. But before I do that, your wife is Dutch, right?
That is correct.
What is her name?
Her name is Daisy, which is like the flower.
Sure.
Spelled a little bit differently. So Daisy Shapiro and Dutch.
I was talking to Larry about that. I said, "No, I think Daisy's Dutch." And he said, "Well, she looks like an American Indian."
This is correct. Daisy has one of those faces that she looks like a Peruvian, American Indian, Asian, but what her ancestry is one half Dutch, one quarter Chinese, and one quarter Indian.
Well, that probably explains the mystery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is she interested in the crystal skull subject as well? Does she work with you on that?
Yes, absolutely. Not only is she interested, she will take the personal crystal skulls we have with her to bed at night, and she takes care of them like a proud mama. I would say she loves the crystal skulls more than me, so she is most definitely very involved.
When did you first see your first crystal skull?
The first crystal skull I saw, I think, was about 1982 or 1983. I was traveling on faith in California at that time. And I had a friend who owned a metaphysical bookstore in San Jose, California, right across from Rosicrucian Park. And I just, I showed her this book. It was called Journeys of the Brain Age Networker, and we became very close friends. And then another time I was talking through, she said, "By the way, I've seen a crystal skull," and she showed me pictures of it, and it was made from amethyst quartz crystal, which is kind of a purple quartz.
Yes.
And then I was able to see that crystal skull. That was the first one I ever saw in my life. And at this point in time, I was just, like I say, traveling around on space, and anything that looked interesting or exciting, being your typical Aries, you know, somebody says, I got a different experience for you, I wanted to do it. So I didn't think I was going there, you know, because I was going to become involved in this and write books and do lectures all over the world. I was just curious.
Now we're going to describe here in just a second what the crystal skulls are. Some people may not know. You mentioned one type of quartz. There's also the white or cloudy type.
Yes.
And the clear type, which intrigues me.
Yeah. Well, there's actually clear quartz. Cloudy clear quartz is actually clear quartz, but it has a cloudy feature to it. You also have smoky quartz, which can be from gray to black. Citrine, which is kind of an orange to gold, or sometimes it can be brown.
Now that one's interesting, so I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, it comes, and actually, when I had a chance to meet with a gentleman named Frank Dorland, who also got involved with the crystal skulls back in the 60s and the 70s, he told us that there's actually blue quartz, too, that can be found in the ground. It's not so common. The most common is kind of like clear quartz, amethyst, smoky quartz, rose quartz, which would be a pink color.
Yeah, I always think of quartz as the pink or rose type, but that's really not even the most common, I don't think.
I think clear quartz probably because they're synthetically creating quartz now for all our modern electronics, and normally they use clear quartz, but you can find it in many different colors. So, and of course, each color has a specific way in which it assists an individual.
You know, it's interesting. We do lots of UFO show, naturally, it seems to me our sightings reports, if you investigate a lot of those UFO sightings, there seems to be quartz deposits around. It may or may not be a coincidence. I don't know.
Well, I have a theory about that, if I may.
Yes.
I think what it is that quartz acts as a transmitter and receiver for different dimensions of vibrational frequencies. And it lends itself to, because I believe many of the UFOs are flying through these kinds of interdimensional portals and doorways, and also on the electromagnetic energy grid of the planet. So the crystal is connected to all of this. So if there's a large crystal deposit, it literally can set up in that area a very special energy vortex, a dimensional door, which makes it easier for them to come and visit with us. So this is my feeling why this would be a connection with quartz. And also, some of the psychic or spiritual channels say that the ETs have developed technologies that integrate quartz crystal with metal, and that this is used on board their spacecraft, or the crystals are used like computers there. Like if you ever saw the Superman movie where he built Fortress of Solitude, he's using quartz crystals to play messages from his parents from long ago. They do something like that. Quartz crystal is very familiar to the extraterrestrials, apparently.
Yeah, you know, we talk about quartz, and it's been around forever. It's mysterious, no doubt about it. Let's talk a little bit about crystal skulls themselves. They basically have, they look like human skulls, but I guess they come in different sizes.
Oh yes. Well, there's three different. First, let's define three different types of crystal skulls, so the listeners can have an idea of what we're talking about. These definitions came through the co-author of our first book, F.R. Nick Nocerino, and his Crystal Skull Society. And basically, what they were trying to do is just identify different crystal skulls. We, of course, have many crystal skulls being carved today all over the world, mostly coming out of Brazil, China, Mexico, etc. And we know how those ones are made. They're using diamond tip tools and saws, drills, and things like that. But prior to this great interest to make crystal skulls, like going back into the 18th century, 19th century, they started discovering some which were in ruins of ancient civilizations, especially in Mexico and Central America. And these were coming out, they were looking human-like, but they were coming from all different sizes and shapes. The ones that seemed to catch the most interest were the ones that were like our own human skull. There are a couple that are almost exact duplicates, although the modern carvers now can make those too. And then there's some those. So there's two older types that are defined. One is just called old, which means was made between 100 years ago to about 1,000 or 1,500 years. And then they have another type called ancient, which is 2,000 years or older. But the problem in this definition is we do not have an exact scientific technique that can examine a crystal skull and say, okay, this one definitely is old, this one is definitely ancient. The new ones, of course, we know because we know exactly how they were made. The problem is when an archaeologist goes to a site and he's going to date different artifacts he finds, they usually have an organic component that they can use, like carbon-14 dating for. Quartz crystal is inorganic, so we really don't have a system that can date quartz crystal how old it is. What we can do is we can look at the surface of the crystal, and we can find, are there what are called carver tool marks. These would be marks that would be left, you know, by a metal instrument or by the machines that are used by modern carvers today. For example, if we took a new skull, put it under a high-powered microscope, you could actually see the circular marks on the surface of the crystal left by the carvers that make them. In the case of the very old skulls or the ancient skulls, generally they don't have these tool marks, but you know, what could happen is a civilization might inherit such an old skull, not really understand what it is, decide they don't like it, and they could have their carvers make alterations for it, and then that would immediately say, okay, now this crystal skull is no longer very old, it was done by a modern carver. But as you can see, we really don't have a good scientific technique to know. The only way to really know about the ancient skulls is we sometimes are lucky to hear about legends of the indigenous people, or sensitives or psychics who will sit with the skull will really get like almost entire history about where the skull came from. Atlantis, for example, seems to be a common theme about where some of the crystal skulls may have originated from. Or we might look at its design. Some of them have an absolutely superior design. And then the question is asked, like we could take the case of the Mitchell Hedges skull, which is almost an exact duplicate of our own skull. This one came out before the use of the diamond tip tools that the modern carvers are using today. So the question is how could these primitive people, without the use of modern tools like the best, really be able to make such a magnificent crystal skull? This is a mystery. So in a nutshell, this is the three different types that we know about, and you know, it's very difficult to be able to prove, you know, if someone says it's an ancient one, if you try to get like the history about it or who had it or where did it come from, it's like you run into dead ends. You just don't know.
Now, let's talk first about the ancient ones. I've seen estimates, in fact, I think you mentioned in your book, 3,000 to 5,000 years old, perhaps.
Well, could be older than that. Definitely several thousand years old. I would say the main theory related to the ancient skulls, if you could talk about origins, and there's no way to prove this, but this is the consensus, let's say, of people who are working in this field, is either they were part of very advanced cultures in their past, like an Atlantis, like a Lemuria, or could they have been, and there's, I think, good supporting evidence for this, based on experiences that people are having in the presence of these so-called ancient skulls, a UFO connection. Could they have been the gifts from the gods, tools given to humanity long ago with the idea that this tool could help humanity to wake up in consciousness? This last point I feel very strongly about, and this is coming from the depth of my soul. There's something connected to that inside of me that just says absolutely this is the key idea that people need to understand about the crystal skulls. And this is the reason why, you know, when I saw my first one, it's just something inside that it's very important that you help this to educate people, let them know about it, and more importantly, give to people as many opportunities as possible to have their own experience with one. Because, you know, sometimes we'll tell people stories, like somebody had a crystal skull and there was a miraculous healing that went around it, and they say, it's not true, it's fantasy, there's no way this could happen. But then they have their own experience with one, and then they kind of like totally change the whole idea about that. So this is kind of the approach that we're taking.
Yeah, I want to get into the mystic or spiritual element of this thing in a minute. But let's talk a little bit about the skulls themselves. Some of them are almost, as you said, exact duplicates of human skulls. But there are others, I understand, that have maybe a more of a slanted forehead or a different shape of the head.
Yes, that's correct.
And how do you explain that? What's that about?
Okay, most of the crystal skulls, which are considered old or ancient, seem to be more stylized. In other words, they're not exact duplicate of human skull. In one particular case, I was fortunate to meet with the lady who has the crystal skull called E.T. This particular skull is a smoky quartz crystal. It is human size, but it definitely does not look like a human skull. It has, like you say, it's kind of pointed at the top of the head, a little pointed at the jaw, but anatomically it is nothing like a human skull. It was an archaeologist actually who looked at it and said, "We found a bone skull in the ground that matches what we see here." So the two possibilities are, could the crystal skulls actually be representations of living beings that might have existed on the earth long ago or might not come from the earth? Or is it possible that, you know, if you talk to an artist, the carver really is an artist. An artist has a vision about something they want to create. Sometimes they will create an object that looks like something that we know in our own world. And sometimes they will make an object that's, you know, kind of fantasy or... Okay, so I think with the crystal skull, it's the same thing. The carver is the artist, okay? So, and that's assuming it was carved. There's a possibility the skulls could have been created with very advanced technology we don't know about, like a laser, precise laser that could cut into a crystal in a matter of moments that's programmed as a pattern to cut. Be possible. But in any case, I would say the stylized skulls give the vision of the carver. Maybe the carver's having contact with some kind of spiritual dimensional being, extraterrestrial. So it's very difficult to really come up with one answer and say, these crystal skulls aren't human-like because of this. You know, you still have the person who creates it and their creativity that's involved, how they're inspired, so...
Right, I mean, modern progressive art and sculpture may have even lived 10,000 years ago.
I don't know. It's just their stylish art, and you know, we don't understand it.
Let's get into the mystical powers of crystal skulls. What type? A lot of people, as you said, your wife sleeps with them.
Yeah.
A lot of people keep them on their desk or in special places.
Yeah.
What mystical powers supposedly do they have?
Well, first of all, the crystal skull is going to have the powers. I don't know if powers is the right word. I like to refer to it more as electromagnetic frequencies that are connected with the crystal. It's already going to have those properties with normal quartz crystal. And anybody that works with normal quartz crystal, if they're open to such possibilities or they're just sensitive to it, they actually feel a heightened energy or they feel themselves more in balance. However, when the crystal is put into the shape of a skull, I can only tell you, either from my own experiences or what I've seen with other people, other things start happening.
Like what?
For example, I remember one time I was here in Indiana and I was doing a session with one of our crystal skulls with a young person, meditating with his music, and his third eye popped open. It never happened. I know for myself, when I saw the famous Mitchell Hedges skull, I just started talking, and it's like I had information in my head that I don't normally have. It linked me into, I don't know, some knowledge bank or something. Like people were asking questions about crystal skulls, and I was just starting, basically my co-author for the ones who were the experts, and answers would come inside of my head. So I think the crystal skull also was either a storage bank, and somehow it's able to link it to the person and download some kind of information or knowledge inside of them. Another thing we've seen, which for some people is frightening, but I think that this phenomenon comes under the category of healing. And healing means if a person has blockages or pain inside of themselves, that if they want to heal themselves, they have to release that blockage, they have to release that pain. The crystal skulls seem to be a powerful catalyst. When a person is sitting in front of it, like being in an energy vortex, and it's just bringing out these things that, you know, are not helping the person, are blocking the person, or stopping them from the highest good, so they might go through, say, a quick depression, they might get a little bit sick, and then all of a sudden they feel a lot better. I know one time after I was with the Mitsuhedi skull, my singing voice improved for a few days afterwards. So another phenomenon around the skull is either to help quickly release any kind of blockages that are inside of the person, or to enhance some type of creative gift. There are people who've had profound dreams after being a crystal skull. There are people whose psychic abilities have all of a sudden opened up after being in the presence of the crystal skull.
You mentioned psychics a little earlier.
Yeah.
Sitting in front of crystal skulls, what sort of information do psychics get out of a crystal skull? Do you have any examples?
Yeah, of course. Many people see them in Atlantis. They talk about a set of 13 skulls, one master skull and 12 other skulls. And these 12 subserving skulls were connected to temples, 12 temples in Atlantis. Some people have seen the crystal skulls connected to Lemuria, which is supposed to be much older than Atlantis. So the implication was is that these civilizations knew how to make them, and that perhaps when Atlantis was destroyed or Lemuria was destroyed, that their crystal skulls were scattered all over the world, and these are the ones that are showing up right now. Some people have had visions of the future. Besides looking at past lives, what other kinds of things, other information has people got?
You talk about I guess for lack of a better term, the almost magical influence of a crystal skull on a person. Immediately, it comes to mind the market value of these things. And, are people buying and selling crystal skulls?
Yes, and what's happening is right now, for the newer ones that are being made, There are thousands of them that are available. And
do you sell those?
Yes, we also, if people are interested, we can help them to get their own skull. Now, there's two perspectives on this, because one is, to the ancient people, or to the indigenous people, the crystal skulls are considered a sacred tool. So the idea that crystal skulls are being sold, for them, it's like, you know, this is sacrilege. But there was one Native American elder that I interviewed for our new book, Journeys of the Crystal Skull Explorers. And he said, it doesn't matter how a crystal skull comes to a person, whether it's a gift, they find it, they buy it, you know, it's supposed to go to that person. And the thing is that these tools are now spreading all over the planet. And as more and more people have a chance to meet with them, even the new ones, by the way, if a person understands how to work with the crystal, how to activate it, we talk about this in the book too, they can wake this crystal up. And what the large crystal skull I have, which is called Portal de Luz, they give you their own names, by the way, too. It gave us this name, which is Portal of Light in English. He showed me that on another dimension, there is an etheric energy network that links all the crystal skulls together. It's just like the internet that we have, where you have this network, and once you're on the internet, you are connected to God knows how many other computers, millions and millions of computers in the world, that on this etheric energy level, the crystal skulls are all connected. As soon as even a new one wakes up, it kind of like links into this network, and what that means is that information, energy, coming from some of the old ones, even ones we don't know about, could possibly be passed through to any activated crystal skull in the world. Now, that's a pretty interesting concept.
Yes, it is, and you think about all of that. You wonder, what Why the skull? Why not just a piece of granite or a piece of crystal? Why does the skull have this certain power?
Okay, well, first of all, the quartz is important because I met with a scientist named Marcel Bogle before he passed away. He worked for IBM. He helped to develop the hard drives in our computers today. And when he retired, he got very interested in crystals, and he created various devices that use crystal technology. But I remember one time he said, there's an interesting property between quartz crystals and the human being, and that's the bone of the human body. Our bones resonate at a frequency that is in harmonic resonance with the frequency of quartz crystal. So it means when an individual is holding a piece of quartz crystal in their hand, it's literally working with all the bones in their body to help that person, you know, to go to a higher level. What was the other part of your question?
Well, basically, why are they making in the shape of a skull? What's the magic there?
Okay, now, there are, if you study this, there are many primitive cultures who revere the shape of the skull. I mean, especially if you go into the Mesoamerican area, you see that they revere the skull, and when a person dies, there's a lot of skulls around it. According to their shaman, death to them doesn't mean the same as it does to modern cultures, modern society. When a modern person looks at a bone skull, they think, oh, that was a person who was alive, and they feel the fear of death. But for these indigenous people, they understand that this is a transient state, that our soul is immortal, that when we pass on and leave the physical body, that our soul still continues to exist and is alive. However, there is also something about the shape of the skull. You know, in a pyramid, if you go one-third of the way down from the top of a pyramid, you come to some kind of special energy place where metals rejuvenated, and if you go there, you feel totally charged and energized. Well, I believe, and there are other people who believe this as well, is that, let's say, the spiritual hierarchy which governs the evolution of humanity, they decided specifically about the shape of our skull. And they chose that shape because they knew that it would be receptive to cosmic knowledge and information. That there's something about the shape of the skull, it's like a receptacle, that an individual can start to receive higher information. I'm sure every one of your listeners had at least one moment in their life where there was some kind of information or understanding they got that they didn't consciously know about, but all of a sudden it just magically appeared. So I think that this phenomenon is an indication that the shape of the skull is conducive to receiving cosmic knowledge and information. So, now let's look at the crystal skull. First, it's made from a crystal. That already is a transmitter and receiver through different frequencies of energy. Then we put it into the shape of a skull, so it's going to have the same shape as our skull does. So that means that it becomes like a vessel of information and knowledge. But in order for a new skull to be able to have all of these capabilities, it has to be activated by human beings through a certain process. And the crystal skulls that we have actually showed us what this process is, and that's what we put in our book. So that's how I see the connection.
You know, it's interesting from many aspects. The one thing that you mentioned was the through time itself and space, the skull seems to be, for lack of a better term, almost sacred.
Yes.
And crystal, of course, has the properties that we're talking about. You know, when you made the thing, I don't quite understand is, I guess the magic is you just take the piece of a quartz or a crystal and you make the skull regardless of how you do it. And today, I imagine, does Waterford Crystal Company make skulls?
Which company is that?
Waterford, the crystal company. I mean, is there a company that specializes in this?
No, mostly the crystal skulls are being created by the carvers. Like there's a number of carvers in Brazil who are making crystal skulls in China.
So they literally just don't pour them into a cast or anything?
Well, I have heard some carvers, when I interviewed them for the book, they talked about that this indeed is a possibility. But in order to do, oh, but there's a problem with this. That's right. If you liquefy a quartz crystal, you know, so you can pour it into a mold.
Yes.
It loses all of its properties. So in other words, you could, when it comes back and cools down, it'll be a piece of crystal, but it loses all of its capabilities and properties. When you heat it up and liquefy it, this was in a book by Frank Dorlett, the carver of crystal. So really, if you want to have a powerful skull, you cannot use that technique. You literally have to take a piece of quartz crystal, and you have to have a skilled carver who knows how to work with these diamond crystals.
So in other words, there's not a chance that these things could be mass-produced. I mean, if they did, they wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
They will be crystal, but it's not going to have the effect like the new skulls that are coming directly from the quartz in the cloud, which are being activated.
Well, what kind of price range are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, most of the time people just want little ones so they can be like $15.
Well, so they're reasonable.
Yeah, they're reasonable. But then, of course, if you want a human-sized one, it could be several thousand dollars, but it depends upon the quality of the quartz, too. For example, right now, finding in the ground an absolutely clear piece of clear crystal is almost impossible. It's very difficult to find. So that means that if somebody says, I want to have a skull made from exactly that, it's going to be extremely expensive, because it's the old rule of supply and demand.
Sure.
But, you know, you can get like a one-pound skull maybe for around $100 or something. You know, it just depends.
Now, you know, we talk about the size of a human skull, and we're talking about ancient technology. As far as we know, they didn't have lasers or anything like that, but it's incredible how you have pictures in your book.
Yeah.
It's incredible how well they come out. In other words, how well they have been manufactured or developed or chiseled or carved or whatever you want to call it, ever how they made them.
Yeah, well, we visited with the carver in Dieter Oberstein, Germany, and he just made a skull recently within the last couple of years that's just perfect for human skull. He really did a good job, but he went many years of training. He was apprenticed by Master Carver, and he just has the gift to do it. But he required diamond tip tools to do it. Diamond tip tools will cut through quartz like butter. So you need to have a harder substance than quartz in order to shape it. But the key is that the primitive people where the skulls are being found, of course, they don't have diamond tip tools. They don't have lasers. So what techniques were they using to do this? Why would, and if they had a technique, which probably takes them years and years and years to make this, why would they spend all that time to do this? So this is part of the mystery. So this is why we feel that a lot of the skulls that have been found, which we consider to be ancient, there must have been superior technologies involved, maybe even technologies we're not aware of, that were used to make them. One example I can give is in our first book, Mystery of the Crystal Skull Revealed, we interviewed, I would call him a cosmic channel. I mean, the guy, you could sit with him and he's just talking all kinds of incredible information. But he said that during the time of Atlantis, what happened is that the Atlanteans took a bone skull and through the power of their mind they were able to change it into a crystal. Or they also would do something with liquefying quartz crystal. They had some technique where they could liquefy it and reshape it. But they had some very advanced techniques that they were using to make these crystals. But it could have come from an Atlantean priestess also. That they took her skull when she died, and with the power of the mind, these priests were able to change this quartz crystal, not only her head, but her entire body. And this idea has also come up too, that maybe there aren't just crystal skulls, but there is an entire crystalline structure that exists. And actually Mitchell Hedges, when he was roaming around in the Caribbean and Central America, he purportedly came across under the ground, like in a cave or something, an entire crystal buoy, and the people there said, you can't go take him out, it's cursed, you have to leave it there.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about the Caribbean and South America a lot. I guess actually crystal skulls are everywhere.
Yes, this is the implication that I've gotten as I've gone out and talked with people, that even though when we first became more aware of the crystal skulls, they were mostly coming out of Mexico and Central America, but now we have Aborigines talking about it. I have a friend, Yoka Gantitin, that was involved with a number of crystal skulls, and she has one that came from Russia. There was a monk who was just walking one day, and he saw a mound that was connected to a civilization from the far past. I think it was called the Scythians. And he saw this crystal sticking out, and he brought it out, and it was a very large crystal skull made from rose quartz, but larger than human skull.
Wow.
I've seen that one. She has actually quite a collection. Skulls, I think about 7 or 8 now. E.T. is one of her skulls. They're on display right now in a museum in Berlin.
Yeah, I've heard about her. I always assumed, for some reason, that maybe they were more prevalent in Russia and Europe, but that's not really true, I don't guess.
Well, so far it's mostly been Central America.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Not even South America. We only have rumors there.
Wow.
Central America and Mexico.
Very, very, very interesting. Our time's almost up, Joshua, but I want to ask you about the people who carve these things.
Yeah.
You've interviewed quite a few of those people. Is there a common denominator about their personality or their mission in life or why they're doing it?
No, I didn't really see a commonality.
Uh-huh.
Each person was just inspired in their own unique way.
They had their own personal reason for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the one carver I know in Brazil, he's doing it as his profession. He was very curious when I met him. You know, why are people interested? So it's kind of for him, people are interested, I can make them. So.
Mm-hmm.
But he did tell me, this is one thing though, that you're right, there's one point I heard from all of them. And that is, they all told me the crystal tells them how it wants to be carved and that shape it wants to be in.
Now, you're getting involved in a special conference coming up next year. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that before we leave?
Okay, sure. And then I'd like to just give out our homepage, too, if I might.
Sure.
Okay, we have a conference. I'm going to speak in Dutch, and then I'll tell you what it means in English. It's called Kristallenschedel Kommenariotop. And what it means is the crystal skulls come toward you. In March of 2006, in Arnhem, which is a city in the southeastern part of Holland, we have a beautiful center, and we're inviting all kinds of people who are connected to crystal skulls, whether they have new or old ones, the carvers, teachers. So we'll probably have about 10 or 12 speakers there, some from North America, some from Europe. People will be able to learn a lot more about the crystal skulls and have that personal experience, which I talked about. The best way to find out about the conference or anything about the crystal skulls would be to go to our website, which is www.v-j-enterprises.com/cs.html. I say that again. So it's www.v-j-joshua-enterprises, like the Starship Enterprise with an .com/cs for crystal skull .html.
Yeah, and we have a link to that on our website. So, yeah, right here by this interview that's posted, which will be available right on up to the time of that conference next year.
Oh, that would be great. And, of course, too, if they go on Google, just look under Joshua Shapiro or Crystal Skull Explorers, and they'll find us as well.
Were there any crystal skulls in North America, the Native American lore?
Well, the Native Americans, of course, have a legend that I've heard about that exists in several tribes that talks about a group of 13. And Jamie Parks wrote a book, and I can't recall the name of it, but she talked about the grandmothers. She stated that, this is kind of like legend, you know, so if it's true or not, I find usually legends are based on truth. So the spirit of the earth saw the children regress their spiritual growth, so she took a part of herself, and she created 12 teaching, or 13 teaching spirits. And these 13 teaching spirits manifested as young women. And so they taught all the people, this was during the time he said of Turtle Island, which is of course when I guess North America and South America were together and it was one continent that looked like a turtle. And then after these 13 young women, these teachers left, they left in their place crystal skulls that contained their entire wisdom and knowledge. And what was talked about by several of the legends is that they would have a special, like, house that the 13 skulls would be placed in, one in the center, 12 surrounding them. And when the sunlight would strike the center skull from an opening in the roof, then there would be projected in this room all kinds of special information and things and things like that to teach people. Now, the idea is that when the Europeans came to the Americas and they started stealing, taking the sacred tools, the 13 skulls were hidden, and that there's a prophecy, perhaps this connects to the Mayan prophecy of December 21st, 2012, that they will come back together, and when they do, there will be world peace. Now, whether this number of 13 or not is correct, I don't know. The Mayans talk about 52 crystal skulls, for example, 13 that they received, and other sets of 13 that went to other indigenous people. The number 13 is important because it always comes up related to different religions, like from Judaism, of which I was brought up. You have the Levites, the priest tribe, and the 12 tribes of Israel. In Christianity, you have the Christ and the 12 apostles. So this concept of 1 and 12 seems to be very important for humanity, seems to be connected with the crystal skulls, and has something to do with the future. So the Native Americans have legends, Mayans have legends, and I'm sure there are other indigenous people who have legends, and probably, I would have to say, after 25 years of working with this, the people who understand the crystal skulls the best are probably the indigenous people, and they are guarding many skulls, is what we hear. That's why they don't want to talk about it so much.
Interesting, Joshua. We could spend hours talking about this.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
I think this is a good note on leaving the program for today with you.
Okay.
And we wish you good luck on the conference. And folks, you can order the book, the ones out of print, as well as the e-book, and you'll have a regular book about that out pretty soon, too. So.
Before the end of the year, we should have a printed version, and all the information about that will be on the website, I think.
Well, thank you very much, Joshua. I've enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.